This podcast is, of course, made possible through the support of our members and from Dartmouth Hitchcock. Imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community with convenient locations throughout northern New England. World-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. For many years, Granite State leaders in business and government have worried that too many young people leave the state in their 20s, whether for higher education, job opportunities, or even just a different lifestyle. And so about 10 years ago, efforts began to address this, such as the so-called 55% initiative, and later Stay Work Play, also the rising interest in young professionals networks in cities across the state. However, while years of attempts to attract and retain millennials may not have yet reversed the trend of outflow to other states, many involved in these efforts are saying that those who do opt to stay here are thriving, with quality of life and opportunities increasing all the time. Today in The Exchange, we're checking back in on that ongoing conversation about the status of millennials in New Hampshire, and let's hear from you, especially if you're in your 20s or early 30s. What do you like or not like about being here? How much does the Granite State figure into your long-term plans? Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. We have four guests for the hour with us in studio. Paul Shea, Executive Director of Great American Downtown in Nashua and Steering Committee Member of YouGo Nashua. That's Nashua's Young Professionals Network. And Paul, nice to meet you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us, Sarah Palermo, Communications Manager and Director of the Campaign for Legal Services at New Hampshire Legal Assistance. She's a former reporter for 10 years at the Concord Monitor and the Keene Sentinel. And Sarah, nice to see you. Welcome back.
Good morning, Laura.
Also with us, Brian Gottlob, Head of Polycon Research, a firm with a focus on economic and public policy issues. He's been digging into this demographic issue for a long time. Brian, welcome back.
Great to be here, Laura.
And also with us, Kate Lusco, President and CEO of Stay Work Play, a nonprofit established in 2009, focused on helping New Hampshire attract and retain younger workers. And Kate, good to see you again. Thank
you.
Nice
to see you.
Well, Kate, I want to start with you. So what's the narrative around this demographic story?
Yeah, so Stay Work Play was created in about 2009, hired staff in 2010 because of things like the 55% initiative. There was this disconnect between students being able to find jobs and companies being able to find young workers. So we've done a lot over the years to promote all that New Hampshire does have, right? To talk about the jobs that exist. We do a lot of work with internships. It's a great way to start to get students connected in their communities. Fun things to do on the weekend, right? The idea that there is actually a social life to
be
had.
That's the play part. Yeah, go ahead.
The play part. The Young Professionals Networks have played a huge role. We actually have two new ones on the scene. So there's 15 in the state, and we expect to see a couple more before the end of this year. They're sort of the boots on the ground that show people, hey, there are actually young people here in addition. So we've done a lot of work, but I mean, there continue to be challenges, right? Trying to spread the word to folks, trying to overcome what is a pretty huge issue for the state of New Hampshire.
So what is that huge issue?
So we have one of the highest median ages in the country. And we've struggled over the years, depending upon sort of what data you look at and who you ask, with either getting people to stick around, right, to go to college or to take their first job here, to get people to come back. You know, I think the common idea is that people go away, but in their 30s, they come back to start their families, which happens to some extent, but not the way that it has in past years. And then, you know, we want to be more attractive to other people. I was just talking to someone the other day about our travel and tourism department. It's great at that idea of, you know, come here and visit, come here for vacation. But, you know, with a little tweak, the idea of, but stick around, you know, that doesn't mean you have to go back home afterwards.
So a healthier demographic balance, in other
Absolutely.
Words, a more reflective balance of all different age groups.
For sure. And I run into people who sort of joke, well, what about us, you know, 55-year-olds or whatever age they might be? And it's not one or the other. It's just about achieving that balance, making sure that when folks are retiring, we have people to take their places. We have people to start your favorite coffee shop or the great music venue that you're looking for. You know, we want to make sure that we have that balance.
Or EMTs to staff the local ambulances or the firefighters and so forth. Well, you need younger people to take on those demanding jobs.
Yes, for sure.
Okay, Brian, so you've been digging into this narrative. What's your take on this?
Well, I agree with Kate. Certainly there's
an issue with the demographic balance in New Hampshire, as there is in many states. The concern, of course, is that as the population age, just as Kate said, that there aren't enough individuals who follow those individuals to support them and things like public services. So, but the issue of median age is really a much more complicated one than is talked about frequently in these debates. You can have a high or relatively high median age for a lot of reasons, one of which is you can have a very many older people. You can have a high percentage of older people, and that's simply not the case in New Hampshire. And I think too often people assume that because New Hampshire has a high median age, it's because we have this tremendous number of older folks, and we're really in the middle. We're actually a little, you know, right around the U.S. average in terms of the percentage of our population age 65 and above. What we don't have is a lot of very young people. One, because we have now the lowest birth rates in the nation.
Really?
Yeah, and that's really...
We have the smallest families.
Well, it's birth rates, births to women 15 to 44, which is how they define that. And it's really a sign of our success rather than our failures, which I don't think people realize. When you look at birth rates, there are some things that are associated with higher birth rates and lower birth rates. And one thing that's associated with lower ones is well-educated women who participate in the labor force. And that describes New Hampshire. So we have fewer children. So when you have fewer children, what happens is you have a lot of people in the middle. That's what we have. We have a lot of people in the middle. And I would argue that that's a pretty good demographic to have. I don't discount the fact that it's important to attract young people, and we could do a better job of it. But we're like 32 other states. We lose young people.
So before we sort of moan and groan too much about this, you've said, Brian, that our aging state is actually a result of our success rather than failure, because we live longer, we're healthier, and because our women are highly educated, and highly educated women tend to have fewer children.
Right. They participate in the labor force. So we have healthier and better off older citizens, so we have lower mortality rates for our older citizens, so they live longer, and we're not producing as many children, and that's a recipe, I'll tell you, for having a relatively high median age. The way we have dealt with that over the last many decades, Laura, is that we've had high levels of in-migration. People in the middle of the income distribution, typically 30 to 44-year-olds, and that keeps our median age relatively stationary. Over the last decade, we haven't seen that in-migration, and so our median age has increased a little bit faster than we're used to.
Well, and I remember 15, 20 years ago doing a show called The Mass Migration,
right,
meaning from Massachusetts. And it was exactly that, Brian, that loads of young families, people, you know, around 30, coming to New Hampshire, primarily from Massachusetts, setting up shop here. We did shows on, you know, the overcrowding of schools. I mean, it seems so different. So we used to be able to replace those young people who would leave for other opportunities or other adventures. And that's not happening so much.
It's not happening as much. One, because there are fewer of those people in that 30 to 44, which, by the way, is going to change with this millennial generation. We're going to see another big increase. So there are fewer of them. And the trend has been to move to the South and to the West. And New England has been on the losing end of these demographic trends
for a long time.
Yeah.
So, Sarah, I have to ask you a personal question. Did you grow up in New Hampshire?
I grew up in Methuen, Massachusetts, but I like to say I spent so much time at the Rockingham Mall and at ballet classes in Salem and gymnastics classes in Salem that I'm practically a native, but technically, no, I grew up in Massachusetts.
So you worked at the Concord Monitor and the Keene Sentinel earlier in your career. So did you ever at some point, Sarah, say, okay, I really want to go to a place with a bigger city or, you know, more young people? Or what's your take as a millennial working in New Hampshire for a long time on this issue?
Sure. So my story, of course, is my story, and it's just an anecdote, and it's not everyone's story. But I fell in love with a New Hampshire native from Manchester. Both of our families are nearby, and we decided, we did talk several times when we lived in Keene about moving to Colorado, moving to...
That's a magnet for young people.
Yeah, moving to California. Philadelphia was also something we talked about, a city that's really vibrant and exciting. But we decided we knew we wanted to be together. We knew we wanted to have a family at some point, and that we wanted that to be near our own families, and we wanted it to be in New Hampshire, so we stayed.
What was the conversation like about, you know, Philadelphia or Colorado? Give us a little more there, Sarah, please.
With both of those, they had some of the features that we ended up deciding to stay for. With Colorado, it was the outdoor lifestyle. Although the economy out there, we had heard so many good things about the job opportunities, the growth and the property values there being really affordable. I have a friend who lives in Fort Collins and was able to buy a really nice home, needs some work, but on a really great piece of land. So they were able to afford something more than we could afford here. And with Philadelphia, it's a city that has a lot of the history that we find we love in New Hampshire. It has a lot of the, colonial architecture, a lot of the museums and cultural activities that we could participate in, but with also more of an urban environment.
Wow. So those are things we'll definitely talk about this hour. Cultural vibrancy, jobs, housing. Having spent a little time in Colorado a couple years ago, the housing boom out there is amazing. And you're right, the economy is quite strong. I want to hear from you too, Paul Shea. And just like with Sarah, your own sort of personal story and some of the decision making that you make and questions that come up in your mind when it comes around staying in New Hampshire as a millennial.
So I grew up in Pelham, New Hampshire, and was no stranger to the Rockingham Mall as well. Salem was my go-to. For high school and college, I attended in Nashua and then chose to move to Nashua. A lot of folks in my cohort were picking places outside of New Hampshire, Boston, moving out to California, moving out to Burlington, Vermont, places throughout the country that they perceived as the grass being greener, to use that Turner phrase. And I decided to stick around, invest in the community that I'd come to know.
What made you decide to stick around?
For me, it was the idea that my family's here, the idea that I shouldn't really abandon something that I've come to be raised by and appreciate, and should instead spend the time investing in improving that place. And I think that's what a lot of folks that stick around feel. New Hampshire is a great place to live. It's a great place to work and raise a family. Why not choose that and do what it takes to make it the place that you perceive is better elsewhere?
Do you want to jump in, Brian?
Yeah, you know, these are great stories, and they really fit the data pretty well. And Sarah, in particular, talking about Boulder, Colorado, which is, by the way, about the fifth most attractive place for young people, young professionals. There's only one metro area in the Northeast and New England that is, by the way, and guess what that is?
It's Boston.
Portland, Maine.
Really?
Yeah, Portland, Maine.
Because Maine has an older demographic than we do.
It's the
overall
only thing that's keeping that from really exploding. But, you know, there's a couple of things about, this generation, this younger generation. One is that they're more mobile. They're more, and particularly as they're more educated, they tend to be the most mobile members of society. And the other thing is that almost all migration has been from rural to metro areas. And that puts New Hampshire at a tremendous disadvantage, because we really don't have a lot of metropolitan areas, and we don't have ones that have, for the most part, that cachet that a Portland or even a Burlington, Vermont, certainly Boulder, Colorado. If you look at the places that have attracted millennials, it tends to be those places that are more metropolitan and that have that certain cachet, the social, the cultural, the arts, that are magnets, and a lot of young people. And so that puts us at a real disadvantage in New Hampshire.
Okay, definitely want to ask all of you about that. But let me also invite our listeners to join us. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Today in the exchange, we're checking back in with that ongoing conversation about the status of millennials in New Hampshire and ongoing efforts to attract and retain this age group. Let's hear from you, especially if you're in your 20s or early 30s. What do you like? What do you not like about being in the Granite State? And how much does New Hampshire figure into your long-term plans? Give us a call. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Again, email is exchange@nhpr.org. So, Kate Lusko, to this theme that keeps coming up, you know, cultural vibrancy, nightlife, and so forth, we're not Portland, Maine. We're not Boston. We're certainly not Boulder, Colorado. But most mothers tell their children, look, just be yourself. Don't be something that you're not. Just be yourself, honey. So, I mean, how do you express that to New Hampshire? At some level, we're never going to be Boston. So how far do you go with even trying?
Which is funny. I often say to people, I don't get the sense that that's what New Hampshire is trying to do, right? I think we're trying to enhance what we have, and we're trying to make sure that we have more variety, more amenities. But I don't think anyone would say we're trying to be Boston or New York or anywhere else, that, you know, New Hampshire has its own identity. I was just saying to someone, one of my favorite things are what I call personalities, right? Portsmouth is very different from Keene, which is very different from Meredith. And that's part of the beauty of New Hampshire. Not only you get to kind of pick your personality and figure out where it is that you fit best, but also you get the variety. You know, New Hampshire people tend to stay within their own little parts of the state. But if, you know, trying to get them to check out different places and get to other parts of New Hampshire and see what's happening, I think helps you build an appreciation for what's here.
Well, and that's up your alley, Paul, isn't it? Again, you know, Executive Director of Great American Downtown in Nashua. Talk about the efforts that you've made in Nashua to make it attractive. Okay, we're not Boston or Portland or Burlington, but we're Nashua, and that's good.
So Nashua, a number of years ago, a group of us started to get together and talk about what we'd like to see come about in the city. It was called Visualize Nashua. And out of that, we talked about a bunch of different amenities, and I'm now in a position to kind of affect that. So in the next few months, we'll be having a series of different new community events, including a bike paddle run, triathlon, a bacon and beer festival. Our farmers market's continuing to grow, and we're also doing a rollout of a street piano program to kind of enhance that creative, vibrant feel. You know, we're talking about how these different communities out in California, Portland, Maine, Burlington, they all have this cachet. A lot of building that is what we do at Great American Downtown, and we're increasing our frequency of programming and events to meet that need.
Yeah, and we talked actually on the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup last week about the piano project.
Oh, cool.
Modeled after Littleton.
Yes.
So, yeah, go ahead, Brian.
I just think that we've heard a couple really important points. One is that New Hampshire is not monolithic. There are different communities that have different attributes. And so we talk about New Hampshire aging, or we talk about not being able to attract millennials. But that's not true across the board. There are communities, there are regions that are better at it and that are aging much differently. So they're not all aging at the same rates. A place like Portsmouth or in the greater Seacoast area has been able to attract more young folks. And I think Manchester's on the way to doing that, and hopefully Nashua as well.
And let's go to the phones, all of you. And Dylan's calling from Nashua. Hi, Dylan. You're on The Exchange. Welcome.
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
So I'm a 25-year-old that lives in New Hampshire, and I just heard your speaker discuss this, the fact that there isn't really a place, like a niche kind of community in New Hampshire where young people are attracted to. I think a big thing that has to do with it is music. I want to go see a concert. I'm either driving to Burlington, Vermont, you know, Portland, Maine, or Boston. There's not really like a big cultural arts center or cultural music center. You know, Manchester, kind of, but there isn't really the big kind of draw, the cultural draw for young people like me.
So a big concert, you have to go to Boston or Springfield or even Burlington, Vermont, as you said, Dylan. And yet you're in Nashua, so what's working for you there?
Again, I'm driving places. What's nice about Nashua is where it's located. You're kind of close to everything, right? You're not too far from Manchester. You're not too far from Burlington to the Seacoast to Boston. But I don't really get my culture from Nashua. You know, I maybe go to an open mic or something small once or twice a week. But you know, if I really want to go to something where I'm going to pay money, especially, going to be out of the state, unfortunately.
Well, Dylan, thanks for calling in. Do you want to jump in on that, Kate?
Sure. So it's interesting. I just met with someone on Monday who is from the Seacoast, went away for a short period of time, and has been back for 10 or 15 years, and has a huge focus on the arts. He's a musician himself, and started this nonprofit to try and bring more attention to artists in New Hampshire and people that are creating their careers out of something that I think many of us think of as, you know, the people on the street corner who, you know, yeah, they're a great musician, but they can't afford to buy food or, you know, have appropriate housing. So he wants to do more to spotlight these stories, but also to bring more of that arts and culture to New Hampshire. And I think, I mean, it's a huge part of that quality of life that we're all talking about. The one other piece I would say, and I feel like I encourage this a lot, kind of to Paul's point earlier, New Hampshire is what all of us make it, right? So instead of this idea of, hey, they don't have XYZ here, I need to go, you know, I need to move to New York City in order to have this, work to create it here. You know, think about that idea of pulling people together. New Hampshire is exactly the kind of place where you could bring a group of people together to make something happen, to have that impact. So I think there's something to be said for, you know, a creative vision and working to bring something here that doesn't exist.
Sarah, where do you go for arts and culture? Are you like Dylan and you sort of drive here and there?
Sometimes. You know, we have tickets for a comedian who's performing in Boston in April, and we have tickets for a big event at the Boston Pops in June. But throughout the summer, we go to there's a little group that puts on shows in Warner. There's an outdoor amphitheater, and you can walk around the really great little downtown that Warner's building for themselves and get some ice cream and sit and watch kids play and catch fireflies and listen to really great music. And for me, that balance is what I've found I enjoy, is being able to go into Boston and then leave Boston. I've chosen not to live there for a reason, and I'm sticking to it, and I'm glad I have.
Well, and we talked about this yesterday on The Exchange, the idea of building a commuter rail linking Boston to Nashua, hopefully Manchester, and in people's wildest dreams, supporters anyway, Concord. And the big argument that people often make is that this will help attract and retain millennials, workers back and forth. What do you think about that, Sarah?
I mean,
you're here already without the train, so, yeah. You know.
I haven't done a whole lot of research on where exactly I stand on the train. I mean, I see both sides of that argument where it could lead to increased costs for folks, but it certainly would be convenient and it would encourage, I think, more engagement and connection between New Hampshire and the bigger cities to our south. But it's not something I know for sure where I am.
Sure,
yet.
It's not actively on your radar.
I'd use it if it existed. I might probably complain about the price.
This is a big issue in Nashua. That seems to be the one city, Paul, that's really advocating for this. I wonder what you think about it, just in terms, you don't have to get into the costs and the politics, but just in terms of millennials, because that is often a big selling point that folks use for this.
So for millennials in Nashua, I'd just say railway is a two-way street, so to speak. So we've got an aging demographic in New Hampshire. One of the challenges that presents is a workforce, skilled workforce. And even if we have youth that commutes into the state, that's what a lot of people aren't talking about, is people coming up for work from Massachusetts. That will help us meet some of the demographic challenges. I think it will certainly increase the appeal of New Hampshire, having that straight line into Boston for entertainment, work, et cetera.
Yeah, some people said, don't we want people to stay here? But the person on this rail panel said, you know, hey, if they are living in Boston but coming up to work, that's good, contributing to the economy, Kate. If they're living in New Hampshire but commuting to Boston, that's good because they're living in New Hampshire. So there's sort of benefits all around. Does stay, work, play even talking about the rail issue?
We don't get involved in political issues at this point. So
okay.
We do have plans to sort of represent the audience, you know, the young professionals throughout the state and see what they think, but not from our organization.
All right. We will talk more in just a moment and take a lot more of your calls. So stay with us. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, an update on the longstanding conversation about how to retain and attract millennials to New Hampshire. Let's hear from you. The Exchange number is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Especially if you're in your 20s or 30s, or you're the parent of someone in that demographic, what do you see as attractive about New Hampshire for these folks? What do you see as less attractive? 1-800-892-6477 is our number again. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Paul Shea is with us, Executive Director of Great American Downtown in Nashua and Steering Committee member of YouGo Nashua. That's the Young Professionals Network there. Sarah Palermo's here. She's with New Hampshire Legal Assistance and former reporter for 10 years at the Concord Monitor and Keene Sentinel. Kate Lusko is with us, President and CEO of Stay, Work, Play, a nonprofit established in 2009 focused on this issue. And Brian Gottlob, head of Polycon Research, a firm with a focus on economic and public policy issues. And Brian has been digging into these demographic issues as well. All of you, let's go to the phones. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477 to Manchester. And Michael's on the line. Hi, Michael. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Sure.
So I live in Manchester, and one thing that I've kind of noticed, by the way, I relocated to Manchester from Boston recently after having lived there for about 10 years.
Wow. Okay. Poster child for you, Kate. Yeah, go ahead.
So I was born here, and one thing that I think I remember from my youth, and I especially notice again now, is that it seems that the pulpit of the discussion of how to develop a place like Manchester is definitely owned by older generations that represent kind of a what I would call a more conservative mindset when it comes to urbanization and modernization. What can young people do to organize to kind of get things like the rail being talked about more seriously, get things like the 3S art space in Portsmouth, which I think is an excellent model for New Hampshire, get things like that happening with, you know, more frequency and perhaps more voice from people from our age group?
So, Michael, are you saying that efforts to attract millennials to Manchester are being dominated by people not of that demographic?
Definitely, and in a completely different way from what I think is being asked of, particularly by this show.
Wow, really interesting. Thank you so much, Michael, for calling. You know, I'm going to turn to you first, Paul. You're a millennial involved in efforts to attract and retain millennials. So what are your thoughts there?
You know, for Michael, an opportunity to get engaged, I'd suggest, similar to 3S Art Space, would be the Old Soul Music Hall project that's coming up. Fellow BG alum Matt Wilhelm's working on that, and that's pretty exciting. But it, as far as things go, it's just a matter of getting out there and engaging, talking to your friends about what you'd like to see and getting out there and speaking your mind. There's no shortage of opportunity to do that. It's just a matter of getting out there and doing it.
Kate, go ahead.
Well, so it's interesting. That was a project I thought of, too, right, that they've done a great job. There's a building in downtown Manchester that the city has purchased and is accepting proposals for, hey, what should we do with it? And one of them that's been done very well, I don't think anything's been decided whether or not this one or someone else will move forward, but is this Old Soul idea, right? So it's a cultural destination. They want to combine sort of music with giving back to the community with a place for people to go that enhances, you know, that part of the city. So I think that's a great, you know, that's a great example of some people coming together to try and make something happen. I think there's great opportunity, and this might be a little bit further than what Michael was talking about, but to get younger people involved in more of the politics of our state, right? So I hear it all the time. How can we get young people in office? How can we get these folks being the decision makers for things that are happening? I think to some extent, there may be a lack of information, at least from what I've found, for what does that look like? You know, what in your city, what are the different roles someone could take on? And do you get elected or do you get appointed or do you, you know, what is that whole process look like? What are the expectations? But I think certainly there are places through the Young Professionals Networks, through the Chamber of Commerce, through creating something entirely new, there are opportunities to affect change.
Well, I think that is partly what Michael's talking about. So I appreciate that point. And in Manchester, you know, if you live in a town, sure, there are fewer young people, but you can go to town meeting and directly affect, you know, what right. goes on in Manchester. It might be a little more trickier to figure out. Michael, our caller, just want to let you know that Mike Skelton was on with us yesterday. And since he mentioned rail, Mike Skelton, the head of the Manchester Chamber of Commerce, was strongly in favor of the rail that you mentioned, Michael. So thank you for calling and good luck with your efforts in Manchester. I can see you want to jump in, Brian Gottlob.
Yeah, look, I think the broader question is, I think, you know, we've come through a pretty difficult fiscal times, and a lot of things that communities have decided aren't really that important are things that are exactly the most important things to millennials. You know, the things that make things that make town special, you know, the cultural and the civic activities. Those in difficult fiscal times are always the first things to go, or the arts center. All of those things tend to be considered not that important. And communities really hurt themselves, I think, with attracting that next generation when they decide to cut those things out. The other point is that, you know, you're on the cusp as millennials of being you're the largest generation. You're bigger than the baby boom generation now. So just as our culture was shaped largely by the tastes of the baby boom generation, we should soon be entering a phase where the tastes and the wants and the desires of the millennials are going to dominate our discussions. There's 83 million millennials, 75 million baby boomers.
Wow. Okay.
So you will have the con. You'll have the control if you choose to exercise it. And that's true, I think, at the community level and certainly at the state level. It's just a matter of finding your way in there and growing into that role.
So it's interesting, you know, you're kind of reflecting our caller's frustration, Brian, in that when times are tight, The things that millennials like Michael are attracted to are the first things to go. And it's also interesting because just when we started focusing on this issue, like 2007, 2008 was exactly when the economy went down. So it's sort of two things, unfortunately, occurring at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, New Hampshire, as I said, is not monolithic. If you look at communities that have really strived to maintain those things that are more attractive to a broader segment, not just, you know, the baby boomers and the older generation, are those communities that are attracting younger folks at greater levels. Seacoast area in particular, even during the most difficult fiscal times, I think made an effort to maintain some of those amenities in their communities that are very attractive to the younger demographic and older demographics. But I think it's really instructive in terms of what we can do and what communities can do.
Well, and 20 years ago, Sarah, the sort of line about Concord was, you know, the sidewalks roll up at 5 o'clock at night. What was it? The city in a coma. I mean, there are all these very unattractive and unfair things that were said about Concord. But that was a while ago. What's the sort of vibe or line that millennials have now about Concord?
It's changed. I think there's a lot of people who did decide to stay because they saw that as unfair of the Concord that they knew and have decided to stay and work to change it. I think it's still a city and is surrounded by towns that have young families and that might be the image and the self-image that it has. But what young families want are walkable neighborhoods where they can live and shop and gather and play all without getting in a car and dealing with the frustrations of traffic. And Concord has that. When we were looking for the home that we just bought, our first home, and downtown Concord was our first choice, we couldn't find the right space for us, so we ended up moving to Contoocook, and we have our library, a grocery store, a pub, a coffee shop, a flower shop, and the high school and the parks and walking trails all within walking distance of our house. And we love it. That's why we chose it.
Again, the number for you to join us here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Jill's joining us from Peterborough. Hi, Jill, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Hold on. Let me switch to not speakerphone. I am a boomer. I'm 67, living in my house of 35 years. And my son and daughter-in-law, who are millennials, also live with me because after college they couldn't find jobs where they were in Boston, and they moved home to find work, you know, struggled to find work. Finally are doing okay now. We're sharing the house and stuff. Anyway, talking with my daughter-in-law the other day, they were remarking how, for millennials, one, they're marrying late, and they're not having children, or, you know, very few children, and they're delaying that, too. And I'm wondering if that's, you know, another factor that is involved in these demographics. I know here in Peterborough, we're looking at declining school enrollments, which are affecting the budget and planning, and, you know, we have these big high schools and stuff with a lot of overhead. And but then the other thing that I know I'm struggling to pay my property taxes, even with the kids helping me. And I'm wondering if this is another barrier to affordable housing that helps people, these young kids, stay and, you know, build into the community.
Well, Jill, this is a great point. Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
And one other thing, we really have a really strong arts structure community here in
Peterborough.
Mm-hmm. We really... And what I'm also seeing is that the young people, the 20 and 30-somethings in town, are really developing a whole new sort of arts group and focus of them. You know, the boomers did have our arts, which, you know, are like pottery and painting and stuff. And these kids are doing a whole new kinds of art.
Well, Jill, I'll let you go because I want to get Kate in on this issue of housing. You know, again, 15, 20 years ago, New Hampshire was seen as a great place to get a home, much better than relatively expensive Massachusetts, but not so much anymore, Kate.
Well, and it's interesting. I've been hearing more and more lately from both the higher education side and the business side that housing is an issue, right? That so graduates aren't struggling as much to find a job when they are graduating from college, But then it's to find the affordable housing to go along with this job. So both from, again, from the higher education side, but from one of the examples of a company is Fidelity. They had a record number of interns last summer on their Merrimack campus, but every summer have to sort of figure out, where are these people going to live? AmeriCorps Vistas that are giving a year of service, you know, some similar concept, right? They have to, the organizations encourage them to find some roommates and get a whole bunch of people together. But it's something that's sort of just honestly in probably the past month really come on our radar that, okay, we might need to shift our focus, bring together, I was thinking about it on my ride here, bring together a bunch of our organizations that we work with in the housing sector to have a conversation. Because, you know, at the end of the day, we're not trying to be the experts of all of these things, but we want to be the resource and kind of the voice to help overcome some of these issues. One other side point just to the caller, Peterborough is actually an area where we're working with a few folks there to start a young professionals network, because the closest one for them really is Keene, which isn't actually that close. And there is a really vibrant community. They have a new maker space that's going really well. And so there's a number of young people. So we're trying to work with those folks to get that started.
Thank you for the call, Jill. Let's take another one. This is Jim in Manchester. Hi, Jim. Go ahead. You're in the exchange. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you. And thanks for having me. My comment is this, you know, I think, first of all, as Manchester goes, so goes the state of New Hampshire, and I don't want to sound arrogant as a Manchester resident. I think there's a lot of truth to that, though I'm sure other cities have importance, too. I moved to New Hampshire in 1997 after my daughter, who was born in 1996, and we moved from Boston looking for a community to live in. And one of the primary reasons we moved to Manchester was because of education. And in the intervening years, you know, we've had the situation in Manchester where, you know, just even the contributing, the local towns have abandoned the city.
Yeah,
and
schools have been having struggles there. Yeah.
Just Candia just yesterday announced that it was leaving after 100 years. And that's because Manchester has the least well-funded public public school system in the state of New Hampshire. And so when you're not investing in the infrastructure and investing in education, it's no longer an attractive place for families to come to. And secondly, my daughter, I have four kids. My oldest is she's away at college right now, and you know, she left Central High School last year and is at Syracuse University, and she is not coming back to New Hampshire because she's just not coming back because of lack of opportunity, and she wants to live in a more forward-looking and dynamic place. And I have three other kids. I have a son who's a junior who'll be graduating next year, who tells me that he's also leaving the state. And not that they dislike it; it is their native state, but they don't see it as you know, we talk about the vibrancy of Portland.
Yeah,
or
you want to explore elsewhere. Actually, this is a long-standing theme of people, you know, growing up in New Hampshire, saying it's great, but they want to explore other shores, so to speak. So in a way, Brian Gottlob, that's a longstanding narrative. You know, you grow up here and then you say, okay, what else is out there? What's, you know, I don't know, in California or in Arizona or D.C.?
That's one of the things that, you know, I find particularly troubling about the debates that we have about young folks is this is not a new phenomenon for New Hampshire. This is decades old. We have consistently lost young people. We're a net out-migration of young people, recent college graduates, as, by the way, are most states that are predominantly rural. We're not unique in that. You know, we're not lacking fundamentally relative to other states. It's just a phenomenon. Young people like to they are more mobile, and 92% of the young people, based on a census study that was done more than 10 years ago, that move to metropolitan areas, move to cities. They move to big areas. They want to be around people that have, you know, more people like them. So it's not a new phenomenon. As troubling as it is, you know, we're not likely to change that dynamic dramatically. It's going to be a trend. What we can do is make some of our communities relatively more attractive. And I think that last caller talked about some of the things that made it less attractive. The lack of investment in amenities in particular, I think, is important. And, oh, by the way, some communities just simply don't even have the rental properties that would attract millennials. You know, that's really often not talked about. We talk about buying homes. Rentals are really important for millennials. They're not buying houses. They're not marrying. They're not having babies at the same rate. And, you know, that's a recipe for people who want to be renters. A lot of communities don't have the kind of rental properties that would be attractive, particularly to young professionals.
Now, do they not have them because they just don't have them or because they don't want them?
A combination of both. I think, you know, some forward
thinking.
Seen
as less stable,
right,
you know.
Right. A lot of misconceptions about rental properties. And I think, again, New Hampshire, there are communities where we've seen an increase in rental activity in the Seacoast area, in my community in Dover, big increase. And those properties of higher-end rentals are being rented to young professionals. So I think it's a combination of that, of not wanting them, not understanding the importance. This is a big generation. If you want to attract them, you better offer quality rental opportunities.
Go ahead, Paul.
You know, fortunately in Nashua, our leadership at the city level has seen the need for additional housing. We're looking at about 500 to 700 new units downtown coming online already in the pipeline.
Well, that's a lot, Paul.
It is. It is. And so between the Brady Sullivan project, the Renaissance Downtown project over on Bridge Street towards Hudson, and a number of other projects, we're looking at that many. I know that the mayor's office is going to be very focused on downtown development, specifically housing and mixed use, and it's certainly not lost on Nashua that's certainly a challenge.
Kate, I can see you want to jump in, and then I have another question for you, Sarah. Yeah.
Yeah, so I would just say, I mean, this is obviously a very dynamic issue. Lots of pieces come into play. But we always say we're not trying to get everybody who ever came to New Hampshire to stay here, right? It's planting these seeds. It's opening people's eyes to what does exist and what opportunities are here. And honestly, if they do decide New York or California is what they're looking for, which, you know, we talked about earlier, we're not trying to be, there's an opportunity for them to come back at some point down the road. One added piece, we have a board member who's adamant that we need to stop directly encouraging our young people to leave, though, right? I think there's oftentimes maybe it comes from parents or guidance counselors in high school, but it's almost like the definition of success is to get out of New Hampshire, right? If you stay here, you're less successful than if you end up in some bigger, bright and shiny city. And so, you know, there's this opportunity for us to rebrand and talk about it differently, trying to encourage people to actually stick around and make their mark and take that opportunity here.
So changing the narrative a little bit.
Absolutely.
You're not that person who never got out, quote unquote.
Right. Or the townie, right? That
Sarah, go ahead. I love your thoughts on this issue of sort of, you know, did you get out? Did you leave? Did you come back? You know, are you less successful if you don't get back?
I know so many of the people that I look to as role models within my own work are New Hampshire natives. Our policy director at New Hampshire Legal Assistance grew up in the Lakes region, went away for college and came back and is investing her energy and her family and is really making the state a better place. So.
All right. More after a short break. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, millennials and whether New Hampshire overall is doing a good enough job of attracting and retaining this demographic. Join us with your questions, comments, thoughts, personal stories at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. And all of you, we've been talking about, you know, attracting young professionals, college degrees. Companies often say, we've got the jobs, we just need the skilled workers. What we haven't talked about yet, Brian Gottlob, is those millennials who don't have college degrees, who want, you know, active, fulfilling lives, who want the great jobs. And I just wonder if you think those folks are getting enough attention in these efforts to attract and retain millennials.
Well, the short answer is no.
Yeah.
And they're not because, you know, one of the things I think the primary motivators of all of these efforts is not just keeping young people, but it's also attracting talent. You know, people who contribute the most to the workforce are generally seen as those who have the highest levels of educational attainment. So a lot of the efforts are all about attracting young professionals or young people who have college and advanced degrees. If I were a young person who didn't have a college education, I would feel a little bit left out of that because I really don't think there really is a whole lot of attention being paid to that. And that's really unfortunate because, you know, I talk to a lot of employers and I've got plenty of employers who are just begging for workers, not necessarily with a college degree. And so and all they hear about is efforts to attract and retain our college graduates or keep our college graduates in the state. So I think they are a little bit left out in this.
So I think you did some work on this too, Brian, right? That or maybe it was someone else's work. Two-thirds of New Hampshire's millennials don't have college degrees. So
I mean New Hampshire overall has about a third, a little bit more than a third, 37-38% of our population, working population, has a college degree. It's a little bit higher for millennials, and the people who are really left out are those who are New Hampshire natives who don't have college degrees, because actually the people that we do attract, by and large, half of them have a bachelor's degree or higher.
Yeah.
So the people who are really left out of the equation for the most part, because we want to attract those people. Nobody's saying, here, come to New Hampshire if you don't have a college degree, or you know, don't leave the state if you don't have a college degree. It's all about if you have a college degree. And I'm guilty of that as well. So I'll take, you know, I talk about adding talent. But those individuals who don't have a college degree clearly, I think, are left out of this, for the most part, this discussion.
Well, when we talk with business leaders about the so-called skills gap, we always get calls from folks who say, you know, never mind attracting people from other states or even H-1B visas. You know, let's invest more in those young adults who were born in New Hampshire. Maybe they don't come from families where college is assumed, but let's help them break that mold a little bit more.
Yeah, and I think we're doing some good things. I mean, I think the community college system is doing some wonderful things in terms of, you know, understanding that it's not just about those with a bachelor's degree and higher. And I'm one of those people who's really guilty of always talking about bachelor's degrees and higher. But I see some really wonderful things being done in the community college, not just even associate's degrees, but any kind of training beyond secondary school. So I think we're getting there. And in many ways, it's happening under the radar, but they're doing some really terrific things.
So, Sarah Palermo, who else is missing from this conversation about millennials? This is one demographic. Who else?
I think we're missing the conversation about millennials as a diverse group. It's the most diverse generation that America's ever seen, and New Hampshire has a reputation, and it's based on statistics and data that we are a 90-something percent white state, and that can maybe be self-perpetuating narrative in a negative way. And to return to the idea of community college education, and I think where some of this might fit together, when I was a reporter, I spent a lot of time with New Hampshire's refugee community. And those young people coming to New Hampshire with their families from refugee camps in war-torn countries are so excited about the opportunities that they have if they can pursue an associate's degree in healthcare, if they can pursue some education beyond high school in accounting, and getting in there and really building a career for themselves and a life for themselves. I think that diversity for millennials is not something that they look at in any negative way. There's a real openness to experiences of people of all types.
Well, that's really interesting. And we do hear, Kate, that this is the most diverse racially, ethnically generation ever. And so Sarah seems to be saying, yeah, and this narrative of New Hampshire is not very diverse may also be hurting our efforts.
Yeah, and we do occasionally encounter people, usually it's someone talking about their child who says, you know, my son or daughter left because they're really looking for that, right? I think this generation more than others really wants to have the, you know, the different ideas and the different cultural backgrounds, all of that as part of their community. And so it's certainly, I mean, it's certainly a piece, too, we talked about of the birth rate, right? That the birth rate in other cultures is rising much more than it is than it is in the white culture, maybe. So that, you know, that could be a part of why New Hampshire's struggling.
Well, here's a Facebook comment from Michael. And Michael, thank you so much. He says, I'm a Manchester native who moved to Boston 12 years ago for college. I met my wife, who's not from New Hampshire, here, meaning Boston, and got a job here when I graduated during the recession. We love living in a city where we can walk to run errands or go out and seldom have to drive. Michael says, if we ever do move to New Hampshire, it will be to a city that, while smaller, offers some of the amenities we rely on in Boston. I know I'm hardly alone in my generation in choosing to live a walkable, diverse city and prioritizing those amenities. If New Hampshire wants to retain and attract young people such as myself and my wife, it needs to compete with places like Boston, Portsmouth, and Providence and invest in things like public transit and schools. Low taxes, he says, won't cut it anymore. Can we talk about this walkable issue anymore? I am obviously not a millennial, but I too do not really like getting in my car for everything in the world. I like being able to just walk to the drugstore or walk to the library. Go ahead, Sarah, but I want to hear from you too, Paul.
So when I was thinking last night and this morning about what to talk about what millennials might be looking for and what I've found in the places I wanted to live, I thought about a trip that I took to Portland, which Brian has already talked about. And while we were walking around the city, we saw so much amazing stuff we would have missed if we had been driving. We saw a recital by a dance studio who had people of all ages who had been learning to salsa with live music and just people out in a park dancing. We would have completely missed that if we had been driving. And I think it's something that the spontaneity of your experiences is so much more. Your engagement with your community is so much deeper. Even last night, we were walking back from a trivia night at our local pub, and just we could hear the river rushing. It made us more connected with the idea that spring is here. It's walking is more than just for your health. It's your engagement with your community and your surroundings. And I'm glad that people are talking about it. I don't think we can talk about it enough.
What do you think about the walkability of Nashua?
Concord in 2009, I believe, passed a comprehensive transportation policy to kind of
complete streets.
Yeah. And it sounds like they're listening. There's been a lot of conversation in Nashua about complete streets recently. The public health department is leading that effort, as well as community development. I think it's one of those things that we can't talk about enough. A lot of these old mill towns are designed in such a way for their past purpose, and a lot of the development of infrastructure has been auto-centric. And getting away from – not entirely away from that. We need our cars. It's a rural state to some degree. But to really make sure that we're representing all modes is super important for vibrancy.
Let's take another call. This is Kelsey in Hopkinton. Hi, Kelsey. Go ahead. You're in the Exchange. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you. So I am a longtime townie, proud of it, of New Hampshire. I left the state for a couple years in order to try to find better employment, but I couldn't find any where I was living at that point. So I came back to Concord, and my husband and I, we were looking for a place to move, which was more family-friendly because we have a 7-year-old son. So one of the things we did look at was walkability, which was a big important issue for us. And one of our first things was Manchester and maybe Concord. However, again, we were also worried about the school systems here. So we eventually settled in Hopkinton, Kentuckook area, and we love it out there. It's a very nice mix of very rural areas. Everything is in walking distance. The schools are fantastic. We love Concord. We both work in Concord. However, there's not very many rental opportunities here that are going to be in family-friendly neighborhood areas. The walking was really an issue for us. So we love New Hampshire. We don't want to leave, and we're both in our 20s, so go New Hampshire.
Well, Kelsey, it's great to hear from you, and I love that you called yourself a townie. Thank you so much for calling. Well, wow, Brian, so we keep hearing the same thing from everybody. Schools, walkability, family-friendly atmosphere, housing. We just keep hearing the same themes over and over.
Amenities, things that people care about. And, you know, the message that I take, and it's a message that I guess I've talked about frequently when I talk about economic development, demographic trends, is that being the cheapest or being the lowest cost isn't a recipe for thriving today. And it's certainly not been a recipe for thriving in different communities across New Hampshire. If you look at the areas that have thrived, even during most difficult times, it tends to be communities that have invested in themselves, that have invested in their amenities, that have kept their amenities, whether it's school systems, whether it's their downtowns, whether it's the walkability. And that's the key message here that almost all of these people have talked about, how important those things are. So if they're that important and that important to attracting this demographic, thinking that the way you're going to attract them is simply offering the cheapest, living and the cheapest everything is just not going to be a recipe. And I think we've got to break New Hampshire out of that mold.
That's interesting. And one of our earlier callers said that he felt like the decisions being made in Manchester were being made by another generation with different priorities.
Right.
Low taxes, inexpensive housing and so forth. And this generation says, no, I want something else.
Well, they want value. I mean, nobody wants to spend more than they have to. It's a value proposition. It's can I get all of these things that I want, this basket of services and amenities, at a lower price than other places? I think New Hampshire can offer that and certainly a lot of communities at a lower price than, say, Boston, certainly, and a lot of these major metro areas. But they've got to understand that that's what people are looking for. That's what this generation is looking for.
Wow. Well, we are almost at the end, and I can't believe it because I have so many more questions for all of you. But, Paul, if you could change one thing in terms of Nashua and its attracting and retaining young people, what would it be?
Engaging more young people. I think that young people will lead the way. As Ben said, we're the up-and-coming generation, the millennials. We are represented hugely. Getting our cohort that's here already engaged to making it the place that we want it to be, doing more of that, I'd say. I just want to say April 20th, we have a speed networking event we're hosting with Yugo at 30 Temple Street for folks to get engaged with nonprofits. So be on the lookout for that.
How about you, Kate? One thing you would change if you could. Wave your magic wand.
So I think building more awareness. I think there's a lot more to New Hampshire than a lot of people think, right? I think, again, especially if you grow up here, you have certain misconceptions that may not actually exist. So this idea of sharing really what makes New Hampshire so great, that, you know, there are well-paying jobs, there are fun things to do on the weekends, there are boatloads of amazing people that are willing to step up and be a part of your community. So I think there's a lot to offer.
So counter the narrative.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Sarah, you want to jump in?
More affordable rental properties of, as Brian was saying, a good value. It's not just about the price, but a safe neighborhood, a quality property to rent, but a place where you can also save money for your future. That's
okay.
Been difficult.
All of you, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it. Thank you. This is The Exchange on NHPR.